Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where sales leaders teach you what's working for them and how you can build it yourself.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by SDR Pods. Learn how we can build you a fully equipped sales development team to execute on personalized multi-channel prospecting and book you more meetings at the link below. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. A lot of entrepreneurs see business as all go, go, go. They have audacious revenue goals. They plan to multiply headcount and they want to gain market share as quickly as possible. But in order to achieve that, they actually need to slow down. I'm your host, Sarah Hicks, and today on the Predictable Revenue Podcast, I'm going to be chatting to an expert about slowing down to speed up. He's a psychologist and productivity coach who helps business owners discover the motivation, systems, and strategies to get more done in less time. He knows the power decisions can have to steer people's lives towards happiness or misery, success or frustration, and he continuously studies and shares the key insights and mental models that can flip the switch for entrepreneurs to realize uncommon results. Dr. Todd Snyder, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Thank you very much, Sarah. I appreciate it, and I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. Well, before we really get into the tactical stuff, Dr. Snyder, give our listeners a little background on you and how you got to where you are today.
Sure. I actually came out of the difficult world of trying to transition back into the U.S. culture after having spent a bunch of my early growing up years in Rwanda, Africa. My parents came back to a small farming community in Illinois. Just as I was starting high school, I really struggled to adapt. And about a year into that, I discovered a couple of books that were about empowerment, self-help books about how to take an internal locus of control, how to change your perception, and had such a dramatic impact on me adapting socially and just enjoying life again that I thought, what in the world, what was that power? I want to know whatever that was. And that led me to an understanding that what I discovered was psychology. And I thought, man, I want to study more of this. So by the time I hit college, I knew I was going to be a psychology major, pushed through that, and then just went straight into a master's degree and then a doctoral degree in clinical psychology at Baylor University. And out of that, I immediately started working with people with trauma disorders, anxiety, depression, all those kinds of things, marriage counseling, a lot of this typical stuff that you do in clinical work. But then I started having these no-shows, these points in my schedule where no one would show because they were sick or their car broke down or whatever. And I thought, there's got to be a way I can monetize this time. I'm just sitting here by myself in this empty office with no windows. You know, I'm not spending time with my family. I'm just here at my office. And so I started writing a little bit about social anxiety and put it out there as an ebook, and pretty soon it was paying my car payments for me. I was like, this is kind of cool. So when a full-time marketer reached out to me and said, hey, would you help me build some like goal setting type info products? I said, sure. And that led into me being a founding partner of a business that became like a small publishing company, essentially marketing people's information products online. And through that process, I became a consultant to more entrepreneurs in the integration marketing space, especially. And I realized that I just fell in love with entrepreneurs and the work that entrepreneurs do and the excitement of that, you know, having that immediate goal right in front of you. And also these enormous long-term goals where anything is possible, where there's truly no limit. It's the only game you can play. Entrepreneurship is the only game you can play where there really is no limit. There's no end to how far you can go with that, even to the point of deciding you're going to build spaceships to go to Mars or whatever. So it's a very exciting thing. And as I got pulled into that space, I realized, you know, these are my people and I want to work with them full time. And so, like you said, I've been a student of active ingredients my whole life. I'm always looking for how can we boil this down to get rid of all the fluff? What is it that actually works? And I try to bring that to the coaching that I do with entrepreneurs. I work with entrepreneurs one-on-one, essentially working with them on decisions, being a private planning partner. And part of that is, honestly, it's looking at their mood. And it's all about state management, right? And so how much certainty you bring to the work that you're doing can have a dramatic impact on your productivity. So everything from high-level business strategy down to state management for the individual entrepreneur is now a part of what I do and my favorite kind of work.
Awesome. How interesting. And so one of the kind of massive findings that you had, or I suppose one of the biggest applications that you could, you managed to take over from your background in psychology to entrepreneurs was this idea. And you kind of touched on it when you said certainty, slowing down to speed up. So what do you mean by that?
Yeah. You know, that started when I started working earnestly on productivity hacks in particular with entrepreneurs. What I realized is a lot of what holds entrepreneurs back in particular is indecisiveness. And so it's partly because if you don't have a boss telling you, here's your objective and accomplish it by this date, you're very vulnerable to shiny object syndrome. Or for the more disciplined entrepreneurs who've completely overcome that, you're vulnerable to your own great ideas and how you might have three of them a week. And so it shifts your attention just enough to where you're not bringing the full capacity of your ability as a human being to charge toward accomplishing things one at a time. So decision-making is a big part of why slowing down actually helps people to speed up, is because if you imagine yourself swimming from one island to another, and at some point you start drifting a little bit, and you have to pull your head up out of the water and look around to see, am I still on course? We try to do that a little bit more frequently, building that into a ritual, a habit, a shorter time span between those times when you lift your head up and say, wait a minute, is it even necessary to get to that island? Now that I've swum here, do I have a new perspective? And I realize there's another island that's even closer and there's more coconuts on it or whatever, you know, that makes you want to shift your course a little bit. So that's one of the big pieces. It's also that when entrepreneurs slow down, we often become less afraid. Instead of just rushing and wasting our time just in this rush mode, where we start to confuse being busy with actually bringing speeding up the real value, what we're trying to do is reduce the operational rushing and instead increase the strategic work on the kind of strategic initiatives that allow you to deliver value to your customers faster. And so there's a difference there. We're trying to create speed by going slow, by slowing down to think.
So why do you think it is that entrepreneurs kind of in general or as a group struggle to kind of see this long-term picture? Or is it something that kind of is in human nature and you're just kind of picking it out in entrepreneurs?
Yeah, I think that it's in human nature, but it is magnified 100-fold for entrepreneurs because of the freedom that comes from being your own boss and having infinite possibilities. Also, we live in a world now where the speed of new ideas coming to us has accelerated even in the last 10 years. New things are happening all the time. I have some clients who've literally set aside their $250,000 a month income stream to pursue NFTs. And I find myself thinking, well, wait, is this a thought out plan? And so, you know, we just have things happening so fast right now that's a big part of it too. The other thing though, is that, you know, I wouldn't say that entrepreneurs don't see the long-term because there are a lot of entrepreneurs I've worked with that self-diagnose themselves as, you know, I've got some ADHD tendencies. And that's kind of one of the things that pulled me into entrepreneurship is just, I like to follow my own passions and the excitement of the moment. And that allowed me to work on my own time schedule and not wake up at 8 a.m. or whatever it is. Like those things sometimes do draw entrepreneurs in. But even entrepreneurs who are very farsighted in their approach, who think of business as the ultimate vehicle to accomplish all of their personal and professional goals, and they're thinking about those long-term goals when they make the sacrifices that are necessary to take the risks to become an entrepreneur. Even in that situation, there is a tendency for entrepreneurs to overestimate their own reasoning power when it comes to choosing what they're going to do today. Mm-hmm. We are entrepreneurs just, and this is true of really everybody, we overestimate our ability to make good decisions in the moment. And we underestimate the power of long-term decision-making and commitment. So one of the antidotes to that is to create short sprints where you say, temporarily, I'm going to take decisions off the table. I'm going to commit to this small achievable goal for whatever it is. Let's say it's a week or 90 days, but we try to keep it short enough to where you can tolerate it, to where you know, if you make the commitment, you can keep it. So instead of feeling like you can't ever come out and pull your head up and look around and try to decide maybe a different direction to go, you do keep coming up, but you do that in a way that you bring your head up out of the water to do some scorekeeping. You say, I made this commitment. How am I doing on following through on it? And so that sprint allows you to relieve this sense that, well, I want to look at all of these options, but at the same time, it helps to remind you of, oh, but I made a commitment until this point, I'm going to sprint toward this goal. And so it helps us to overcome this tendency to think that we're able to just make decisions in the moment. But if you're planning your day one day, if you're planning your work activities one day at a time, we accidentally default to whatever feels urgent. The stuff our team is calling for our attention on Slack ends up pulling your attention away from the longer term objectives, the real needle movers that allow you to double, triple your revenue year after year.
Right.
So that's the exciting thing. I've had many entrepreneurs who within 6 months of starting to work with me have doubled, and in some cases actually tripled their revenue. And it's not because I'm some genius, it's because I'm saying, hey, let's do what you already know works and let's do it better and let's reduce the distractions. And let's really find those bottlenecks that if you just focus your attention, the laser of your attention there, instead of it being this diffuse light that isn't powerful enough to do anything except maybe grow some plants, you take that energy and you focus it into a laser beam that can cut through steel. That's what allows you to get things done fast.
Awesome. Well, I want to dive into how exactly entrepreneurs can identify these kind of strong long-term goals and not be distracted by these shorter-term ones. But before we do that, one of your kind of teachings or ideas is that slowing down actually makes you more intelligent. Can you tell me a bit about that idea?
Sure, I'd love to. Yeah. So the, you know, part of my training as a psychologist was full years of my life spent studying under professors who talk about the various theories behind IQ tests that I had to learn to administer. I've administered hundreds of IQ tests over the years in various contracts I've had the state and just private people that wanted to know about their kid, or in some cases, entrepreneurs who wanted to know, you know, what's my IQ? Where's my strength? Where's my weakness? And through that process, you know, I've thought a lot about, well, what is intelligence exactly? You know, those who study it will admit we don't really have a great idea. And if you study the history of it, there's even some weird kind of problems with it. In general, though, conscientiousness as a personality trait and IQ, those are the two things that are going to be the best determinant, statistically speaking, of who's going to succeed in the job. If you hire an employee, if you can look at those two variables, they're the two that rise to the top consistently. And so it does matter, you know, despite the truth of what people like Carol Dweck have pointed out, you know, when you have a growth mindset, if you focus less on what are my static abilities and focus more on what you're fascinated to learn, you do better in the long run. But nonetheless, it is a real factor that determines, you know, how we do in life. And so it's something we think about a lot, because we don't want to take a kid who's got, you know, a very low IQ and expect them to perform at the same level as someone that's maybe average, because that harms them. You know, if we have these high expectations, they're just not able to, it would take more effort for them to learn at the same speed as, say, an average child. So we have a good reason to study this and try to understand it more. Well, there's people have pointed out problems, though, like, well, what about social intelligence, you know, and what about artistic intelligence, people who can walk into a room and they can immediately see how to redecorate it in a way that makes it pleasing for everyone. How do we measure that? That's not showing up on any of the IQ tests, right? But it's real and it affects us in real life. And so there's all of these people that have poked holes in this. I was reading this book by Michio Kaku, the theoretical physicist, and he pointed out something. He said, you know, someone who drops out of school because they can't seem to pass algebra, who becomes a thief and decides they're going to rob banks for a living, I guess, if you can call it that. That person may not have a very high IQ in certain measured ways on the standardized IQ tests. But if they are able to predict the future well enough that they can anticipate how the bank tellers are going to react when they pull the gun on them, where the police are going to set up their barriers to prevent their escape, how they can put that money to use without getting caught using stolen money, all of these things that involve predicting the future, that is a form of intelligence that may explain what it means to be intelligent better than anything else. Mm-hmm. And I got thinking about that. I was like, well, that's interesting. So it really comes down to intelligence. Maybe the best definition is your ability to predict the future, to create a rich mental simulation of the future so rich that you can sidestep the problems that would bring you into outcomes that you really don't want to experience, the stuff you hope you can avoid, and allow you to get more of what you really do want in life. And so with that definition of intelligence, it's kind of like an umbrella definition that would subsume all of those millions of different forms of intelligence that allow us to predict the future. And so that really is something that that as you look at into it deeper, if you look at the neuroscience of how the brain works, our brain really is it's an anticipation machine. And that's a large part what memory is for, and it's why we spend so much time, you know, replaying stuff in the past. We can learn from it, projecting our mind into the future. And so back to your question, how does it make us more intelligent? When we make it a regular practice to slow down and to project our mind into the future, to ask ourselves, the course that I'm on, is this really what I want? That's one of the fastest ways. It's one of those active ingredients that I've discovered. If you can get people to do less of the stuff that they don't want, that they think they're supposed to, because maybe they heard in a mastermind that everyone was doing it and everybody else thought it was a good idea, or, you know, maybe they inherited from their parents or society in general some idea of, you know, this is what success looks like. If you can get people to admit to themselves what they really want, then it's amazing how sometimes the barriers to productivity just unlock. It's like a breakthrough, a dam opens and the water just flows, because suddenly you've admitted to yourself, this is what I really want. So that's a piece of it, is looking into the future and being honest with yourself. What do I really want? Once you identify it, it's easy. It's amazing how your energy flows toward accomplishing goals if you truly are aligned and you really have said, you know, I do want that. So that's part of why slowing down, sometimes it creates the space that we need to be able to analyze ourselves and our own resistance that we sometimes feel to getting things done, to ask, have my priorities changed? Have I learned something new? Is there something I'd rather be doing with my life or my business, a new business direction that we should take? And then there's the second piece, which is just literally the fact that when we think on paper, we do better. You know, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but if you just try to think through a complicated decision in your mind, you jump around, right? There's these little pieces and you think about the pros for a while, you think about some cons. Whatever your attention's focused on at any given moment determines at that second kind of the reality of how the decision feels to you. And that's why sometimes we can have this feeling of, I know the decision now, and you have this confidence about it, and you go to sleep, the next day you wake up and you're like, wait a minute, it doesn't feel, after sleeping on it, now I feel differently. Mm-hmm. It's because whatever we focused on really captured our attention. But when we think on paper, essentially what we're doing is we are expanding our working memory, the aspect of the human mind that allows us to hold things simultaneously. Some people think of it like the RAM of a computer. It's like, how many tabs can you have open? How many programs can you be running all at once? And so thinking on paper, that allows us to simultaneously spread our attention across more variables and to see how they interact. For example, one of the things I like to do with entrepreneurs is to, for decision making, is to create factors that really do matter, and then to weight those factors, and then to rank those different options on the weighted factors. And then we see on a mathematical sheet right there in front of us, this is what you seem to say is the direction you probably want to go down most, you know, based on these factors that you've said you care about. So sometimes it's slowing down to think on paper, you know, to have a thinking partner, or even just spend some thinking time by yourself, slowing down to look into the future. And what happens is we enrich our mental map of the future. We're able to see it more clearly. And that opens up the possibility of finding loopholes and shortcuts and opportunities to leverage excess capacity to be able to accomplish our business goals or personal goals much faster than we would if we just, you know, did the grind every day and never stopped to think about it.
Right. That absolutely makes sense. And for the entrepreneurs that might be listening right now who are thinking, okay, I understand if I've got kind of like full ownership and full control over my company, I understand how I could take this, apply it, and I can see the benefit immediately. But if they're being held accountable to a board or, I don't know, investors, you know, that kind of thing, who might be anticipating and expecting really, really quick decisions for the reasons that we chatted about in the intro there, you know, they've got another round of investment coming. And so they need to hit all these revenue targets before that happens, whatever the example might be. How can an entrepreneur kind of balance this idea of, okay, I need to slow down to make really logical decisions and have that foresight with the fact that they maybe do need to make really quick decisions because they're held accountable to someone else?
Yeah. Well, I mean, one thing you can do is literally, you know, point them towards, say, like a 2010 Harvard Business Review study. I forget it was something like 351 businesses were essentially put through a gauntlet to see which process of decision making they use, whether it was the rush towards goals as the highest priority no matter what, versus the let's slow down to think process. And what they found is those businesses that slow down have about a 40% higher productivity on the goals that they're striving for. And so part of it is to go to your board of directors and say, hey, we could rush towards this, but I wonder if we might actually achieve the goal faster if we scheduled a full day where we come together and we dialogue about this and we look at some of the nuance and we allow the discussion to rise to a higher level than normally we would have time for in a daily stand-up meeting or, you know, where everybody's on an agenda and pushing through to have things happen quickly. So that's one thing that you can do if you're answering to somebody who's demanding a certain level of speed. I think the other thing to do, though, is literally we're not talking about working longer hours. So I don't encourage entrepreneurs to go from their packed out 12-hour day to now make it 13 hours by adding on an extra hour of thinking. I'm talking about actually trying to reduce from 12 hours down to 8, maybe 6 hours. You know, for some entrepreneurs, it works better to just bring the highest and best energy to a smaller period of time. And that's part of the process that you want to go through is where is my time going? And as an entrepreneur, if there's not a significant amount of your time going to thinking and planning out the structure, then you're not really using the full power of being a business owner, because the DNA of a business plus the people getting, as Gino Wickman says, get the right butts in the right seats. Then you've got the DNA of how this business model provides value to a customer base, whether it's a product or service. You're trying to engineer the DNA of that in such a way that it produces value in such excess that people are willing to pull out their wallets and pay your organization for that value you've created, right? So it's not about increasing the amount of hours you're rushing. So I would say if there's a board breathing down your neck, let's see if we can increase your efficiency by delegation, automation, elimination. And in some cases, as Rory Vaden says, you know, procrastinate on purpose, you know, procrastinate for success, where you say sometimes it's better just to put some things off on purpose, just to create some space to think, but also because a lot of times the rushing to get things done, and then you later discover, oh, well, we didn't need that after all. Mm-hmm. So looking for those opportunities to become more efficient, to create time to think, allows you then to come to those board meetings saying, we've accomplished more than we even promised to you. And the reason we were able to do that is because we discovered a new opportunity to relieve one of the bottlenecks that was holding us back.
Awesome. Yeah, great response. Definitely makes sense. So let's talk about what slowing down actually looks like. What are the initial steps for somebody who has not been practicing this type of decision making? What are the initial steps that they can take to try to put it in practice?
Yeah, I love that question, because now we're getting down to the nitty gritty of real life, and nothing's very valuable if it's just theoretical and it doesn't help you in real life. So, you know, for me, the very first thing that comes to mind is a tripwire. So this is to prevent us from falling into the natural human tendency to just start rushing. And then when we feel behind, we rush even faster. And when we feel behind, we just start going faster and faster till we fall on our face. It's to prevent that from happening by having a regular interval, something that serves as a tripwire that reminds you, hey, it's been a certain amount of time has passed. When was the last time you slowed down to think and to observe your own behavior and ask those difficult questions that require a little bit? It's difficult. I mean, it takes energy. I'll be honest with you, like thinking through this level of complexity and trying to figure out how can we solve these problems, there's a part of us that resists that level of mental effort. Just like a writer who sits down, it's much easier to reread what you just wrote than it is to push on and create the next paragraph. So it does take mental energy, and sometimes we resist that. But if you have a tripwire in place, and that could be something that comes up on your to-do list software that reminds you on your, it could be something scheduled on your calendar for, you know, twice, you know, Friday afternoons, twice per month. It could be something like working with a coach like myself. That's one of the reasons why a lot of entrepreneurs hire me, is because they know they're not going to skip their appointment with me. And they know I'm going to ask them, hey, let's slow down. And I'm going to walk them through a series of questions that are specifically designed to create this process for them. So the tripwire is the very first step of that process. And I think when a person does just that one thing, they create a tripwire for themselves. You want to add to that a commitment to yourself not to skip it. Because when you get rushed and you think, oh, I've got this in my schedule to sit down and think, the tendency is when you're feeling rushed, well, I can buy back some of my time by skipping it this week, right? But that's a downward spiral. It's actually a death spiral for entrepreneurs, because there's literally no end to the to-do list that you can pile on yourself as an entrepreneur. There's mm-hmm. always fires to put out. There's always problems that could be fixed. There's always new opportunities that if you could just capitalize on them, could generate even more revenue. And so because there's a never-ending to-do list, it helps if you see those, that tripwire, if you make a mental note of it beforehand, you do a little bit of prediction. And this is circling back to our previous discussion about seeing the future before it arrives, building a mental simulation. This is where psychological research on the psychology of action, how do we get ourselves to follow through and do what we meant to do? It tells us that if you visualize yourself following through on a certain activity, you are far more likely to do it than if you just visualize the outcome that you care about. So, for example, in one research study with college students, they took half the students in this research study who they were all in the same big class, and they had half of them just sit down for 5 minutes every day, visualizing walking up to the board, finding their name, looking across, and seeing an A+ for the final exam. The other half, they said, for you, we just want you to visualize going to your dorm room, closing the door, turning on the lamp at your desk, opening your textbook. Picture yourself studying that. Picture a friend coming to the door and say, hey, you want to go out drinking or whatever the distraction is. And picture yourself saying, I'd love to, but you know, this isn't the right day for me because I'm focusing right now. I really want to get a good grade. So they're picturing the process of studying. So then they monitored two things. What was their actual grade at the end of this semester? And they have them both keep logs of, well, how much did you study? And you can probably imagine the outcome. The outcome mm-hmm. was that those who visualized the process of studying spent way more time studying and got way better grades than those who just pictured the outcome. And so, you know, we love in the self-help world, we've created this this love affair with picturing the outcomes that we want. But you have to remember that the science shows us that that's just half of the equation. And if you're missing the other piece where you visualize the process of getting there, that you're not generating the kind of motivation internally, and you're not activating the way the human brain actually works in a way that's going to serve you. In fact, there is even some research that shows that just visualizing the end result demotivates us, because we feel like we've already accomplished it. You know, if you imagine yourself driving your Ferrari up to your mansion, it may actually decrease the drive to get there compared mm-hmm. to if you envision a fork in the road, where on one hand there's the mansion, on the other hand there's the IRS chasing you, and because your back taxes or whatever, and you start thinking, okay, what are the differences on those two paths, and to really think about the process for getting there.
Interesting. It's so not just this manifestation, which is the kind of the buzzword that the self-helper, certainly like wellness buzzword. Mm-hmm. It's not just manifesting that thing, like putting yourself up a beautiful inspiration board that has the Ferrari on it, but rather, what do I have to do today, tomorrow, the next day, a year from now mm-hmm. in order to earn that or whatever that goal
exactly.
might be.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what you want to visualize, is the process to get there.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. That's so funny, because it's something that that is certainly well known in like pedagogy. It's something that we know that you have to teach somebody the process, not just the solution. Yet it's funny that it has been missed pretty much up until, I guess, recently in terms of self-help. Like, it's not a well-known sort of theory for self-help that you've got to visualize the process of getting there. So it's interesting that there's somehow that disconnect there.
Yeah. You know, it is actually very well known in certain scientific circles. Like there are certain circles when you where you'd walk in and nobody would bat an eye at what I just said because they know of the volumes of data that back that up. But in the world of self-help, the truth is it's easy to market whatever people want to believe.
Sure.
And so it's very easy to sell, for example, the you know law of attraction or the secret concept that, well, you don't have to do any of the work really. If you just think the right things, then it'll come to you naturally. Now, I'm not discounting that there's something that happens in the human brain. And sometimes, you know, there are factors in this universe that go outside of scientific understanding to date, you know, about how things happen, you know, and so there's power in visualizing where you're going, because you have to give your brain a target or a destination. And even if that's just to open your mind to the opportunities to go after that, you know, if you keep that at the front of your mind, it can be motivating as long as it's paired with the visualization of the process that you're going to use to get there.
Right. Got it. Okay. So we've talked about some of how you can start to put this in practice in terms of holding yourself accountable and then holding yourself accountable to holding yourself accountable.
Like that.
What about kind of the counter? Because something that I think of is like, okay, if I was really trying my best, trying my hardest to make sure that I put enough time thinking, what kind of on the flip side, what is too long? Like, when do you know that you've thought enough and now it is a logical, well thought out decision versus just sort of getting stuck and potentially paralyzed with this? Have I thought through enough? Is it going to work? You know?
Yeah. I love that question. You're really good at this. That is a fantastic question. It makes me excited just thinking about that, because it gets at the real nitty gritty, again, the real life stuff. And so here's my first thought about that is that, you know, when you do this process right, you're going to score yourself on your progress toward your goals. That's again tapping into the way the human brain is wired, that if you have a series of cascading deadlines, so you take your long-term goal and you break it down into shorter and shorter goals until, you know, from a 3-year vision down to 1 year, and now we're talking a 12-week sprint, and now it's this week, what do I have to get done in order to be on track for that 12-week outcome? And then this just today, you know, what do I need to time block schedule on my schedule today to make sure I spend the time to invest my attention, my time, my energy, and the things that really do matter to get me to that 12-week outcome? That's how you know if you're just spending a lot of time thinking is that, and not actually doing anything, is that what you're going to see on that self-scoring process, which is, again, it's a rhythm. You know, every week you should have a time to score yourself on, did I follow through on the things that I said I care about ultimately that matter to me? And it prevents us from drifting for too long and for too far away from our ultimate goals. And so if you, let's say you and I were to sit down and say, okay, we're going to do a planning session. We're going to actually make that a goal. We're going to say, our goal is to come to a decision about this by Friday. And then we're going to break that down to what needs to happen in order to do that. Some of it's going to be, I'm going to set aside some time to think, but a lot of it might be, you've got to go gather some information. Maybe the reason you can't decide between this career and another career is because you don't have the data yet. Well, who can you interview to get that data? What data sources exist out there already? Who can dramatically speed up that process because they've already done the work? And we can go to them and just ask them, you know, given this circumstance, what would you do since you've already walked around that corner and you can see around corners we can't? You know, so we would actually be measuring, are you following through on the goal of making a decision? Mm-hmm. And then once you've made your decision, now it's a matter of asking the next question, which is, do you have a plan? And we're going to document that plan. We're going to create an outline that's going to create structural tension. It's going to create this natural motivation where you build a bridge from point A to point B and you say, here's how we need to get to, here are the circumstances that have to change in order for me to reach point B. And we just by looking at that on a regular basis, it creates this natural pull, this desire to complete that outline that we've created for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so it's very unlikely. I've never seen someone where if I really ask them, if I spend time asking them about what they really want, and then we make some decisions about what they really want, I've never seen somebody just kind of sit there, because it instantly increases your motivation. But to the real core of what you're asking, but is there a point where you say, okay, enough is enough, you've got to make a decision? I'd say definitely yes. Sometimes if we realize that that's the case, we say Friday's our goal. We get to Friday and we say, okay, we need more time. All right. So we make it the next Friday. After we've continuously put that off once or twice, we're going to ask ourselves that question of, could it be that this is one of those things where there's too much ambiguity and we don't really know the answer yet? In which case, it sometimes isn't the most intelligent thing you can do is to make a decision not to decide until a future point in time. You know, to say, for example, I can't decide about, I'm thinking back to a relationship context where I used to do quite a bit of relationship coaching. And, you know, I'm imagining a scenario where someone says, should I break up with my boyfriend or my girlfriend? Sometimes the best answer is, well, you have both options open if you put it off for 3 weeks, right? Maybe new data will emerge that will make it a very clear decision between now and then. If you make the decision to break up now, it's pretty hard to go back, right? So it's like there are situations where you can say it doesn't have to be an all or nothing. Right. Another example of that same thought process, a business owner has a very expensive machine that they want to purchase, and let's say it costs $500,000 for this machine, but it could double the productivity and solve one of the bottlenecks for their business and increase revenue as a result. But they're thinking, what if we end up not having enough new business come in to use that new machine to its full capacity, ends up being just this financial burden? Well, sometimes just spending some time with a thinking partner allows you to recognize that it's not an all or nothing. That in this case, what if you buy that machine, you start working with it, and it turns out you don't need it, but you're able to sell it on the used market for $400,000. So you're out $100,000. But that was $100,000 that was a good risk that allowed you to move towards your revenue goals, instead of thinking of it as like it's all or nothing. There's no in between.
So if you're kind of stuck, if it is an ambiguous decision, like you're saying, sitting with it to think of what all the sort of potential paths forward might be, rather than just, am I going to do it or am I going to not do it?
Right. Yeah. In fact, decision-making experts, they all seem to agree and come to the same conclusion that the most important first step when trying to make decisions is to overcome the human tendency to think in binary terms. It's this or it's that. There's only two options. You should always try to stretch your mind to fill out at least a list of like 5 or 10 things in some circumstances, 10 different options that you previously had discounted as just not possible.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, absolutely. I like that. That's a good question. And so, yeah, I just want to circle back to one thing I said that I don't think I've fully wrapped up for anyone who's listening closely enough to catch me on this. There are times where deciding not to decide is the best decision because it allows you to sprint towards the things you are certain about. So certainty unlocks speed. And this is, I actually run a small network of entrepreneurs. And that is the topic of our mastermind group, is the speed of certainty. And it's because we've recognized that when you're really certain about something, it allows you to move at a much faster rate than when you're sort of on the fence, you're not sure if this is the right direction to go. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes the best thing you can do is say, well, for the next month, I'm not going to think about that. I'm going to put it on my calendar. So I have this peace of mind that I'm going to come back to the decision then. Between now and then, I'm going to focus all my energy on something I am sure about. And then suddenly, again, you unlock this torrent of productivity that you otherwise may have missed.
Well, why don't we get into some examples of entrepreneurs or clients of yours, or just people you know that have managed to unlock this by changing, whether it was by embracing this type of decision-making that they hadn't before, or maybe somebody that, like you mentioned, some people do have that kind of farsightedness kind of more naturally than others. What does the impact of this type of decision look like?
Yeah, I'm thinking about one of my clients who, when we first started working together, was working as an affiliate marketer, and he was doing really, really well. He's really gifted at this, essentially selling someone else's product through Facebook advertising, and he was driving a lot of traffic to them. And then they just shut him down on this one traffic platform and said, we want to own that internally with our own team so that we don't have to pay the little extra cut to him as an affiliate. And then but he managed to ramp up with one of their other products, and then they did it again. And so we were, of course, focused on how can we make more money faster with different products. And then we slowed down to think a little bit. And this is all the credit is on him. I did not think of this. He said, you know what? I think it's time for me to create my own product. And I thought maybe he was joking at first, but he was serious. And he's one of those type of people that just gets things done once he knows, once he's clear about the direction. And that's what he did. I don't remember the exact timeline, but I think it was within 3, maybe 4 months, he had his own product with labels, and it was a supplement that he was selling online. And he ramped that up to $100,000 per day of ad spend for his own product so fast that it just dwarfed all of the income he was previously making. So that's an example of someone slowing down to think, wait a minute, what if instead of rushing to try to make more money as an affiliate, what if I became the person who has affiliates working for me?
Right.
I think maybe in the popular media, or that's maybe not the right term for it, but think about a classic example is Warren Buffett, who, you know, this was a long time ago, but he really changed the investing world by saying, instead of trying to figure out what's the market doing today or this week, he said, I'm going to slow down and look at the fundamentals of a business, and I'm going to invest for, you know, I'm going to spend maybe 3 or 4 weeks really digging deep into, does this business have what it takes to still be around in 5, 10, 20 years? Are they likely to be profitable? And through that method, you know, he became the wealthiest person alive for quite a long period before somebody passed him up. Mm-hmm. Being able to just use that one skill of slowing down to speed up.
Cool. Are there any other kind of business leaders that come to mind for this? I'm trying to picture kind of those really iconic, well-known, you know, CEOs and founders, and you know, like the Jeff Bezos of the world, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Do you think they have demonstrated evidence of this type of decision-making?
Yeah. You know, there are mavericks and exceptional people who seem to be able to accomplish productivity feats that no one can quite understand how they can possibly pull it off. But I think for the most part, I think this is a bit of a generalization, but for the most part, anyone who we've heard of them because they've become so successful, they have to some degree mastered this skill, or else they would still be trying to run the business wearing all the hats, doing it all themselves. Because right. one of the most powerful and immediate ways that business owners can slow down to speed up is to take things that they are personally doing that they think no one else can do this. This is my unique skill set, and no one else is capable of doing this, and figuring out how do I operationalize it. So, for example, I take just one small piece of this and find someone who could be an expert at that, mm-hmm. and then another small piece, and someone could be an expert at that. Actually, this is a question I asked to someone named James Friel, who teaches a course about hiring, and I was asking him, I was like, you know, in this one scenario, we're trying to get people who are really talented at writing, but how do you get someone that's good at the subject matter and good at writing, which is a skill in and of itself, but then you also need the editing? And he's like, wait a minute, Todd, you're looking for a unicorn. Like, okay, those people might exist, but they're really hard to find. Why not just find one person who's great at coming up with ideas, who's a subject matter expert for this topic? And then why not find one person who's just amazing at writing prose, and then one person who does the editing after those two people have worked together? And that solved the problem rather quickly. So back to your question, are there business leaders who are using this? I would say just about all of them have mastered that skill of slowing down, think, where's our bottleneck, and how can we bring in the right people or the right external resources in order to leverage excess capacity, mm-hmm. so that everybody wins. There's an unlocking of value and speed as a result.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. What an incredibly interesting episode. If people want to learn more from you about topics like these or anything else, where can they get in touch with you?
You know, I am primarily just on toddsnydercoaching.com, my primary domain. You can find my blog there and sign up to get some of my best ideas emailed to you as I think of them, or as I gather them and consolidate them from the entrepreneurs that I get to work with. And find those cross-pollinating ideas that seem to fit for everybody. That's the best place to find me, is just go to toddsnydercoaching.com. And I would love to have additional readers and their ideas coming my way as well. So I appreciate that.
Awesome. We'll be sure to link that in the show notes so that everybody can have a chance to check it out. I've also taken note of that Harvard Business Review study that you mentioned earlier on. I'm also going to pop a link to that in if you guys want to check that out. But Todd, Dr. Snyder, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been really incredible having you. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
And thank you guys all for watching and listening to another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. We'll catch you next time.